How's it? How you doing? Well, hope you've had an amazing sporting week. It's been another jam-packed one. It's that time of the week again. It's time for another installment of your weekly sports podcast, Talking Point. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the forum where we engage and debate with our top citizen sports journalists who keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, we also line up some special guests. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cramer. Joining me in studio this week, our first expert panelist, omnipresent on all our various media platforms, both print and online, the head of Citizen Sport. Welcome back, Jacques van der Westhuizen. Great to have you back.
Hello, Trevor. Hello, everybody.
And speaking of special guests, he's also been around a couple of blocks as a sports journalist. He then swapped the sports world for motoring. He's the man who oversees the production of the Citizen Motoring Content Department across all our digital platforms and the popular motoring supplement. I'm hoping to tap into your Formula One and MotoGP knowledge today. Jaco van der Merwe, welcome to the show. Great to have you on board.
Thanks, Trevor. Nice to be here.
Let's kick it off with a spot of rugby, though. First up, the countdown is in single digits now already as we head towards the kickoff of the 2023 Rugby World Cup in France. The action underway on the 8th of September when hosts France play New Zealand. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on that one because, as the format dictates, that is the Springboks crossover pool. And dependent on whether we finish first or second in our pool, then either one of those teams are our quarterfinal opponents. Now, Jacques, just briefly, the Boks in camp this week in the Mediterranean island of Corsica before relocating to Toulon. How significant is that massive 35-7 win over the All Blacks? And prior to that, the crushing victory over Wales. They're called warm-up friendlies by some, but I don't see anything friendly about it. Lots of positives, though. Should we see this as perhaps peaking at the perfect time? Momentum and belief are big factors to take into a World Cup. But I also don't exactly see All Blacks coach Ian Foster in a heap of sack and ash either.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Firstly, I think, we shouldn't read too much into that result at Twickenham, even though I would far rather be Jacques Nienaber than Ian Foster, and I would far rather be a Springbok rugby player than an All Blacks rugby player at this stage. It was a crushing defeat for the All Blacks. They don't normally go down like that as they did. Conceding five tries, completely dominated and overwhelmed in many departments. So the Springboks will be confident. They will feel good about themselves. They didn't pick up any further injuries. So there'll be tons of belief in that squad and that. And like I said, I don't think the All Blacks will be too panicky, but they'll certainly be asking themselves a number of questions and difficult questions. They've turned their last 2 years around under Foster after a difficult initial period where he was almost sacked and they came right in that, and this defeat almost puts them back at square one. But they're a quality outfit, and in a World Cup anything can happen. They stay good. They stay a very competitive team, and it's going to be a massive opening match next Friday.
7-1. It's not a soccer score. Jacques, talk us through your views on this whole 7-1 bench that has got pundits and rugby fans and even coaches talking this week, spitting fire in some instances, as you phrased it in your column this week. The Bok Brains Trust experimented with a subs bench consisting of seven forwards, just one back against the All Blacks, virtually a whole fresh pack on later in the game. High risk, surely not sustainable, Jacques, especially in the World Cup space.
Yeah, definitely. I can't see them doing it in a big pressure-filled environment in the World Cup, especially when it comes to a knockout game. It's just far too risky. I don't think they'll go that route at all. This was a warm-up game, as we said, almost like a friendly, and they had an opportunity to test something new that they've probably been, toying with this idea for a while now. Quagga Smith is possibly, he's a forward, but he's more than a forward. He's such a versatile utility player that he can almost play anywhere, if pressed into a certain position. So, yeah, I found the negativity and the outcry quite laughable, actually. I mean, it was a one-off thing. I don't think we'll see it again. I might be wrong, but, it's not as if we put a 200-kg, 7-foot giant into action. It was a small little back who weighs, barely 90, 100 kgs. So, I don't think it should really cause too much fear in that among so many of the rugby public. It's surprising that so many have said so much about it. It's something, though, that the Springboks toyed with, experimented with, and it came off nicely for them on the day. It could have gone horribly wrong as well, and then nobody would have said anything, and the Springboks would have been laughed at in a way. So let's just see it as a one-off at this stage.
Anything to unsettle the box, it seems, prior to World Cup in their quest for a fourth Rugby World Cup. Back to the 7-1 debate quickly, Jacques, and maybe you want to add to this. We chatted about it during the week, and perhaps we should just have a quick chat about it on air. Russie has a huge influence on the coaching of the Boxers, the director of rugby, no doubt. But one thing is for certain, the big mouths will always find a reason, as I've just said, to moan about or unsettle the three-time champions, that's the Springboks, ahead of such a big tournament. But one thing is for certain, and we chatted about it, Jacques, Russie has always been and still is an innovator with an incredible rugby brain. We can reel off examples. Is this against the spirit of the game, do you feel, or simple Russie genius?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the latter. I mean, I wouldn't say it's against the spirit of the game at all. I mean, nowhere in any law or rule book does it say who you have to pick on your bench. You know, everybody over so many years just assumed that it was, you know, so many forwards and so many backs in that, and nobody was prepared to really experiment with it until Russie decided on doing it 4 years ago. You know, and well done to him for that. And as you say, he goes back, you know, to the days of playing for the Free State and that, you know, where he experimented and tried new things in that. And one thing that this this decision to play seven forwards on the bench last weekend has done is definitely wake the rest of the world up and keep them guessing going into the World Cup. I can't see them doing it again, as I've said, but everybody will certainly be guessing and wondering, you know, what next from the Springbok team. I can't see what they're going to, you know, come up with next, but I'm sure Russie and Jacques Nienaber, you know, have got a few other tricks up their sleeves. I don't know what they could be, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see something else again over the course of the next couple of months.
Red lights and bomb squads, et cetera, et cetera. What next from Russie? That's where we'll leave it for now, rugby-wise. Speeding up just a touch, let's chat motorsport. Lights out, off the starting grid we go with Jaco. Let's go on two wheels first. South Africa's Brad Binder, the focus of our attention here in Mzansi as far as MotoGP goes. Doing wonders, getting the best out of that Red Bull KTM bike, one has to say. Currently fourth in the World Championship title race. Jaco, thanks for your patience. With just less than half a season to go, dare we still dream?
Trevor, it's actually exactly half a season. We've had 10 races in and got 10 races to go. It would be foolish to write anybody off, especially in the light of last season where Fabio Quartararo was sitting very pretty top of the standings and looked very much like a shoe-in for his second consecutive title. And it was a fairly similar case with Pecco Bagnaia, and Ducati just kept on believing, and they managed to reel Quartararo in. Slightly different this season because of the sprint race format. That means there are half of the points up for grabs on a Saturday. So if we take the last race, for instance, at the Red Bull Ring 2 weeks ago, the Saturday, Pecco Bagnaia won, obviously Binder second. The Sunday, Pecco won the main race, Binder second. So Pecco earned 12 points on the Saturday, and add that to the 25 on the Sunday, that's 37 points. So there's a lot more on offer every weekend. It's not saying that it's making Binder's job any less challenging to reel in Bagnaia, but Bagnaia sitting very pretty at 251 points. In second place, we've got Jorge Martin on 189. Third place, Marco Bezzecchi on 183. And then Binder on 160. So the gap between 2, 3, and 4 is only 29 points, where the gap between 1 and 2 is all of 62 points. And then from Binder to Johann Zarco in fifth place is 35 points. So it is shaping up for a massive podium battle. And even if Binder is not technically or mathematically, however you're going to put it, not in line maybe to win it, He is definitely in it for his best season ever. His three MotoGP seasons thus far, he's finished 11th, 6th, and 6th. Even if he just stays in 4th, it will already be an improvement. But he's come out saying, listen, he doesn't race to come 2nd. He doesn't race to be in the points. He wants to win races. And, I mean, we can only dare to dream. He's lost three races. Technically, he's been on the podium. If you discount the little track limits penalty he got in Assen that bumped him off the podium, but he responded brilliantly with the 3rd place at Silverstone, 2nd place at the Red Bull Ring, and I think it's all to play for.
We briefly mentioned it. A characteristic of the season, if we look at the bulk of the podium finishes so far, has been the dominance of the Ducati bikes. Yet Binder has already succeeded in splitting those Ducatis on the track and also lurking in the top four. Bagnaia, Martin and Bezzecchi, top three on the standings, all on Ducati machines, with the Ducatis of Zarco and Marini filling out the top six. The question, how far has the KTM team come this season, and what do you feel they have to do to close that gap on Ducati?
According to the KTM bosses, they are very close. According to them, it's a few pieces of the puzzle they need to find. But it's also a case of Ducati has obviously sensed that there is something brewing there at Austrian KTM team, and there's something special happening. And at the last race at the Red Bull Ring, they were talking about the phenomenal starts that Bagnaia had. And that's something that Binder's done early in the season. Binder and his KTM teammate Jack Miller, they've just been sensational launching off the line. And it's almost like Ducati has upped their game, and they have upped their game with good reason. And it was such a close contest throughout the race. And Binder said afterwards he was struggling a bit, not with rear tire grip, but with the rear wheel spinning too much when he's changing gears. And it's definitely something they're working on, something he has accredited Miller for this season. Look, Miller's been after being in with KTM in Moto3. He joined Honda in MotoGP, and then he was with Ducati. He basically came off the fastest bike of last year, the Ducati, onto a KTM. And Miller's been very complimentary. Binder's been very complimentary of Miller, his teammate, for the insight he's brought with him. And I think that alone has made a massive difference. And just if you look at the one-lap pace, that's always been something, not that there's anything you can criticize Binder for, because what he's done and what he's done for just putting South Africa again on the map has been phenomenal. But if there's one little thing you want him to improve, it's his one-lap pace, so he can get better qualifying times, start higher on the grid. And that he managed to do at the Red Bull Ring, I mean, qualifying 3rd position. And remember, they've got one qualifying for both, and that counts then for the sprint and the main race. So he was off in 3rd sprint race, finished 2nd, off 3rd main race, finished 2nd. That's already improved. Of course, they would want to improve a lot more, but they are very close. They are seriously very close. Like I said, Ducati has taken notice of it. And just splitting those Ducatis up the order there. Miller's one-lap pace has always been good. He seems to fade a bit more than past seasons this season. But obviously, still insightful what he brings to the team. And they said it's a good combination. And I'm very optimistic going into the rest of the season.
On to four wheels very, very quickly. Not much can be said. A boring procession to some who are not hardcore Formula One fans. Max Verstappen and Red Bull running away with the title. A one-man show right now. But some fascinating subplots that you often mention to watch out for through in every race. Talk us very, very briefly through some of those. The quiet rise of McLaren comes to my mind immediately. The usual driver movement rumors, the paddock talk.
It's been fascinating, the race at Zandvoort, the Dutch Grand Prix last weekend, because as you mentioned, McLaren was on the up, and then it was a chaotic weekend with weather wreaking havoc, having to change tyres between intermediates, dry tyres during the race. And that put the likes of Pierre Gasly on the podium at the end of the race. And that is brilliant for Alpine, because Alpine has gone through so many changes over this season. And in a past season, and for those who watch Drive to Survive on Netflix, it's been such a fascinating showdown between McLaren and Alpine for that elusive call it at this stage the fifth spot on the podium besides Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari and Aston Martin. And then it looked like McLaren has completely done the number over Alpine, and all of a sudden Alpine's back. And also a guy like Alexander Albon just doing fantastically well in a car, the Williams, which we all know is not great. And just to have Fernando Alonso back in second place and Checo missing out on the podium in the Netherlands, that gives Alonso a bit of close the gap to Perez. And it's no done deal. It's not cut and dry that Perez will, after winning two races this season, the only other two that Max hasn't won, which also obviously gone to Red Bull, and Perez won. That's just absolutely fascinating. And Lewis Hamilton at this stage, when you listen to Toto Wolff speak, it seems he's changed his mind a bit over his future. And also a contract extension there is not a done deal at this very stage. So a lot to look forward to in the rest of the season.
Finally, the most often asked question, and it's probably easy to answer, but for some, not so easy. Driver or car, Jaco? The Verstappen phenomenon, we saw it from Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes a couple of seasons back. Total dominance, and he still remained competitive, did Hamilton. We've seen the rise, you've mentioned it, Lando Norris, Fernando Alonso, one of my favorite drivers, incidentally, making magic in that Aston Martin, 7 podiums so far. And then, sadly, we're also seeing Ferrari of late fading a bit.
Yes, it's just absolutely fascinating. Yes, your Formula One champion will always be in the best car. That's just how the sport works. But it's not a case of getting in that car and just victory is assured. And what's been fascinating about Max this season, he just hasn't been the dominant force. He's been a absolute tsunami over the last season or two. And just the way he's matured, and breaking now record after record. Last season, the most wins in a season, now equaling Sebastian Vettel's record for the most consecutive victories. It's just been absolutely phenomenal the way he has matured and the way he has kind of honed in on game time, race time. When the lights go out, he is at this stage on a different planet. And yes, the car is good, but and that's also in turn, giving him more confidence. But it's just, call it an athlete, call it a racing driver, at the peak of his powers, in the best possibly powered and balanced car, obviously there is. And yes, it is boring for some, but I mean, we have to, exactly like we had to appreciate Lewis Hamilton all those years, when it was him and Rosberg going at each other, and then when Valtteri Bottas joined him, it wasn't much of a fight throughout the course of every season. But yeah, I mean, give credit where it's due. When Hamilton was on top, he was phenomenal. When Max now is on top, and he's phenomenal.
Jaco, thanks for your great input, but stay right where you are. It's that part of the show where we hail and hammer, as we like to call it. We hail excellence and we hammer mediocrity. It's our weekly flop and gold star of the week feature. My flop of the week, sadly, it's the Proteas T20 cricket side. Clobbered by Australia in their first of three T20 internationals by a mammoth 111 runs at Kingsmead on Wednesday night. Really poor effort with both bat and ball, but still some time to make amends. It's a 3-match series, so let's see where we go. And my gold star of the week, that goes to, I'm going local here, and I'm giving it to the besieged Kaizer Chiefs soccer coach, Molefe Ntseki. After being pelted with objects by angry Kaizer Chiefs fans and escorted off the field, out of the stadium, he took it in its stride, he kept his head, he appealed for patience, and he steered Amakhosi to back-to-back PSL victories. Now for the big test in the MTN 8 against Sundowns this coming weekend. Jacques, how are you looking?
Yeah, Trevor, you know, it's easy to be critical of all the people who are criticizing the box for that bench, but I'm going to actually go with our relay team, our men's 4x100 relay team that bombed out at the World Athletics Championships last weekend. They dropped the baton, and very disappointing. They were in there with the shout of perhaps getting a medal, which would have been our only one at the champs. And afterwards, Akane Simbine had a lot to say about ASA and how unfortunately, you know, they don't really get, you know, together for training camps. There's not enough input from their side. But overall, just a disappointing performance from that relay team. We were all looking forward to a good run there. And then my gold star this week goes to the Springboks. It's a week out from the World Cup now, and they're really looking good. They ticked many boxes at Twickenham. They ticked many boxes against Wales the week before, and they're looking really good. So, you know, it doesn't come every day that you beat the All Blacks 35-7. So well done to them.
Yaku, how are you leaning?
I agree with Jock. Gold star, I'll give it to the Springboks. I was hoping that the All Blacks doesn't get on the score sheet, but unfortunately they did. But, I mean, we will take it. And I'm going to go very left field here. I'm going to think Russie missed a trick there, or Jock, with a 7-1, because I think an 8-0 is open. I mean, you talked about Quagga, and if we can teach Quagga to take a ball out of the ruck and pass it to the fly-off, why not have an 8-0 instead of a 7-1?
And on that note, that's where we'll wrap it. You have yourself a great sporting weekend with the Citizen as your companion. That's both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, motoring editor Jaco van der Merwe, thanks for joining us. Always a treat to share your thoughts with you on the show. My name's Trevor Cromer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM? You'll also find the podcast on the Citizen YouTube account. Remember, as always, don't wait for the opportunity, simply create it. May all your days be sporting days. Till next time, take it easy. Cheers.